Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. We're going to teabag fight. Yeah.
You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. It's The Session, and I am joined today by two very special people, very special guests, and very special co-hosts. This is the kindest opening I've ever done. Nate Smith and Teresa from Crooked Lane, my favorite lager brewer. What's going on, you two nice people?
Hey, guys. What's going on? I'm doing great.
It's been a hot minute, Nate.
It's been a hot minute, yeah. Made it through. Still alive on the other side of this whole thing. I don't know. Yep. I feel like it's like exponential change every day. Every day feels like a month, but it simultaneously like goes by like an instant. It's weird. This compression of time in the last 18 months. I don't know if I'm quite still used to this. I'm not quite down with it, but yeah, here I am. It has been a minute. It's a pleasure to be back on with everybody today. Hello, friend, and everybody else here. This is cool. Nice to see everybody, at least virtually, even though I happened to see you the other day, at least for an instant, which was really nice, Jason.
That's right.
Hadn't seen you in a minute either, so that was very cool.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was cool. Just hanging out outside, hanging out in my driveway.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's interesting to, like, you know, see, you know, friends, but in this context, like, work friends, right? Like, we've seen each other more for work events, and especially over Zoom. I think you've done, like, a show or two. I can't really remember, but that's...
Yeah, I did a handful of shows, but yeah,
it's been a long time, and then for the first time, like, see you in person, and it was that awkward, you know, normally I'm just going to try to crush your ribs while I'm hugging you, but that first, like, oh, hey, I don't, are we, like... You know, it's almost like
everyone wants to like extend the hand or like,
you don't know what to do.
Like some people just go right in for the hug, you know?
Yeah. It depends on where you are. It's almost like we broke up and we're after our first date when we got back together and we don't know what to do yet.
Yeah. And I'm like awkward as hell anyways. So it's like, I walk into that minefield precariously anyway. And so, you know, get me and you in the same area and it like kind of amplifies itself once again. So
yeah,
add COVID on top of that just makes it. It just makes it even more funny. But you navigate that through one way or another. Most people have found whatever they're comfortable with these days will announce their vaccinated status to you if you haven't seen them in a while or something like that and kind of figure out what everyone's comfortable with. You know, I got friends that are just ready to rip the mask off and give you a big hug and a kiss. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
And that's, you know, depending on who it is, that's fine too.
Yeah. And then me, I'm still going like, well, you know, I'm like reading off the list of facts of like, well, also, you know, just because you're vaccinated, it doesn't mean, and we could still be, you know, and it's just like, I just, you know what,
I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to hug you. And then I'm going to, you know, go. It would be fine. I got my mask on. Everything's great. We're going to be fine. It'll be all right at some point.
Yeah, you were holding beers, so I was easily distractible. Well, holding beers and handing them to me. So you could have done pretty much anything at that point. I think I probably would have gotten away with it just fine.
But, yeah, that's true. And Teresa, welcome back. It's been a little while for you, too. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of you guys. I went to CBC, mm-hmm. and it was really funny when they gave you your badge. You could get a little sticker, and it was like green was come on in for a hug, yellow was like I like my distance, and red was like, you know, piss off, don't talk to me at all.
Oh my God,
that's a smart way to do it.
Yeah. I had little green stickers all over my badge. Come here, people. I was like.
Yeah.
In the face of so many people, and I came away from that and I was like, boy, if I don't get COVID now, like this really worked out well. And then I came home for like a week and a half.
Yeah.
And my three kids all got COVID from school and infected me.
Oh man.
You see? And then I got infected from my family.
Yeah.
So I had my breakthrough COVID over the last I guess my end of quarantine was last Friday.
Okay.
So today is really my first day. I've been at the brewery at all in like 3 weeks.
Wow.
Other than like driving by with a mask and like waving and shouting things out my car door.
Yeah.
It has been totally lame, but also cool. Like I'm really glad the fallout just kind of stopped with me.
Yeah.
But I basically am a superhero at this point.
Yeah, so. At least for a couple months, man, for sure. That's what they say. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that everybody, you know, got COVID. That sucks. And, you know, of course, I knew before. That's why I was laughing about it, because I knew that everyone was fine. Everything's great. And so I'm glad to hear that everybody's doing well. But, yeah, that's a scary, scary proposition, man. You know, and then like Bev's going to Florida and she came back. And he's like, nah, we're all tested fine. Like, how do you I don't understand, man.
I don't get it. It's so funny. It does. I get where people are like, it's random. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, I literally have sick children laying on top of me and coughing in my face. Like,
that, it's going to happen.
It's unsurprising that I was infected by that. But I was actually kind of surprised I didn't get infected by Colorado, given the circumstances.
For sure.
So yeah. Hopefully everybody came from back from that relatively healthy. From what I've heard, like, I haven't heard anything.
Everything's cool. Good.
Not really sick. So
that's good.
But yeah, I, you know, lockdown of course is a thing, but when you work at a brewery, like you still gotta do the beer and still gotta do all your things. So like, I feel as busy as I've ever been, if not more busy. And
yeah,
you know, I feel pretty auspicious about things right now. So,
okay. Well, that's good. I don't know what that word means, but I'm assuming it means good.
It does mean good.
All right.
It's like, we're good.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Well, our guests today are Tommy and Stefan from a brewery called Hello Friend. And they are, hey guys, and they are in Berkeley, California, and of course, in the same spot associated with our folks at the Rare Bear.
That's correct.
So, we're talking,
so it's just kind of like a clean beer program, a little side project, if you will, of the Rare Barrel mothership.
Nice. Yeah, and I know that Jay's been talking about that thing for a while, so I'm glad you guys are up and running and all that kind of funky stuff. But I just, real fast, picking up beer the other day, I don't go anywhere. I don't do anything because I'm trying to be, you know, like we were just kind of talking about, I'm unsure of even people that I know that say they're vaccinated. I'm like, I just want to stay away. But I was picking up beer and walking up to the Rare Barrel. The place is totally different. That space looks rad. But you guys had like a box of masks out for people, the big pump of sanitizer everywhere. There's big signs explaining everything. And everyone inside had their masks on. And it was like, it felt very comfortable, even for someone like me who doesn't really want to, you know, do anything. I was like, oh, I feel actually pretty good about this.
That's a weird way to explain comfortable.
Yeah.
we're doing everything we can to be as like precautious as possible. Obviously, the consumer is delicate in this timeline. So we want to be sure we can provide everything we can to make sure they're comfortable and safe and the staff is safe and everything like that. So,
yeah, I think it's really cool, man, especially, you know, coming out from East County out here where, you know, people are like wearing bandanas as masks and you're like, I don't want to like... want to associate with anybody. Anyway, it was just a little side note, I guess, you know, backpacking on the conversation we just had. But I thought you guys were doing great, and I felt really comfortable as a semi-consumer going in. So, you know, I appreciate that.
Appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah. But anyway, so hello, friend. And I was speaking a couple shows ago, which I had forgotten the name and the association. So I was just reading the calendar, and I was like, this has to be probably the best brewery name I've ever heard of. I think Hello Friend fucking rules. And I don't know why. I think it's just so, like, it's not, you know, sometimes you can get, I don't know, sort of lost in the weeds, or sometimes you can sort of get too big and bombastic with your brewery names. But, you know, Hello Friend just is like, it's just already sort of disarming.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you like it. Really. Very few people that do, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. It was a hot point of contention, obviously, because it's the name of a whole new brand for us. So we wanted to make it right and good. And ultimately we sent like 30 to 40 different names to our copyright attorney. And that's the only one that came back with all green lights.
Wow. And
that's why we're Hello Friend, frankly. And but it worked out.
That's wild, because I feel like 10 years ago, you maybe would have sent five over, if any, you know what I mean? Or like, but now I think you have to be. So Tommy, actually, let me back up for a second. What do you do at Hello Friend? What's your
official title is Director of Brewing and Blending. So I just kind of am the producer behind the scenes. I don't do the labor anymore. Well, that's a lie. I do all the labor as much as everyone else does, but sure. Just kind of help facilitate everything there, really.
Okay. All right. And then, so you were there sort of in the middle of the naming and when the split actually happened. Is it a split? I don't know. Explain it to me.
I mean, it's not necessarily a split. I mean, if you recall in like 2019, we were doing that sour IPA project, and it was kind of just preparing the consumer for the idea that we're going to make clean beer in the future. Not because we necessarily wanted to, but kind of because we had to. We're leaving so much money on the table just by doing sour beer for 6 years at a time or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So we kind of made the conscious decision to start this side brand that would kind of increase our portfolio, improve the, I don't know, the volume of beer that we can produce as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we settled on doing this. I mean, the real impetus is purchasing our own brew house, and it kind of felt like a shame not to use it for more than just 15 barrels of sour beer every 2 months.
Yeah, I got you. So it was sort of a conscious decision to you know, basically string everybody along, but prepare everybody, prime the chambers. Of
yes,
consumer
prime
base
the pump
of
is
like,
a good way to put it, for sure. Okay. The sour IPA thing was definitely cool and unique, and the beer was great, but it was just kind of like putting it out there that we're probably going to do stuff that isn't all sour all day, all the time.
Interesting. Okay. How do people react to that?
Fairly well so far. There are very few naysayers, and I mean, the internet is kind of avast with them at this point, so it's been fairly well received.
That's good. All right. Yeah. That's great, man. That's cool. It's good to hear. Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, the decision to prepare everybody in advance instead of just, you know, jumping out. It's like, yeah, here we are.
That was in 2019, though. So we had that whole Corona timeline kind of fuck everything up for us, frankly. We bought the brew house in July of 2019, I want to say. And we didn't install it until January, February of 2021.
Okay.
So it was kind of just in limbo for a long time. So we had all these grand plans that obviously didn't really come to fruition, but ultimately it happened.
Yeah, that's true. And Stefan, what's your role at Hello Friend?
I'm the head brewer and just the brewer, basically. And so
we only have one. He's our head brewer. He's everything.
Nice. You're the assistant brewer, head brewer.
Yeah. So I'm doing all of the Hello Friend work for the most part, because it's pretty small at this point, and then just helping out with whatever additional rare barrel related stuff needs to get done.
Excellent. Okay. And then how did you get that job? Were you working at Rare Barrel beforehand, or were you a Hello Friend addition, I guess?
Both. Okay. I worked at the Rare Barrel from 2014 to 2018, and then I left for 2 years and worked at Temescal in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, I guess it was February of this year, Tommy reached out and asked if I wanted to come back, because they were just getting the brew house online and we're starting this brand, and it seemed like a good fit, and still here.
So you came back. How was your return home? How was your homecoming?
It was, I mean, I didn't know what to expect because it had been all, it's both familiar and foreign at the same time, because everything sort of looked the same if you didn't look too carefully, but actually everything was different. So,
okay. You know, your space does have a tendency to do that, even on the consumer side. Like, I don't get out there often, but it felt like every time I did, especially this time, it's like, okay, things are sort of different, but it's similar at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We move a lot of things around from one place to another.
Yeah. But I do kind of like that vibe. It sort of keeps you on your toes, even, like I said, even from this side of the counter. So I can only imagine what happens, you know, back behind the stacks of barrels that you guys have.
Yeah, you don't want to go back there.
No man's land.
Yeah. So did you have any prior experience before going to the Rare Barrel, or did you get all your brewing experience, you know, between there and Temescal?
I started at the Rare Barrel as like a part-time production assistant. Mm-hmm. And so interested home brewer.
Nice. Okay. That
got pulled in and never got a different job.
Never got a different job. I like it. Okay. So you're home brewing, obviously clean beer. Were you doing any sour beers at home too before you went to the Rare Barrel?
Yeah, honestly, it was easier. It felt easier to do like Brett mixed culture stuff at home because it just felt a little, you know, less. I didn't have a great homebrew setup, so I, you know, not as temperature dependent, and it just felt a little. Those were the beers that were working out the best. Honestly, I was really into homebrewing, but I was not one of those people that got really into amassing all the gear and whatnot.
Okay,
so. There was definitely a gap. I knew what I wanted to do, but couldn't do it with the equipment that I had. So,
you do it for a living.
A long time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah. I guess I get that. There's definitely a point in every homebrewer's life where you can, the path splits and you can either go and get everything that's shiny in the entire universe, or you can just sort of like, well, this is what I have and this is what I can make. And I know how to do other stuff. I don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
I think sour beers too, like you were saying, Stefan, that they give you some parameters that are a little bit more open. I mean, there's certainly things that seem like they would and wouldn't work, but you have a little bit more freedom to play around. I think when you're getting started and don't necessarily have all the gear, that can be one way you can express a lot of creativity and get complexity into the beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a gutsy move. Like I don't know a lot of homebrewers that are like, hey, I'll do Brett beers. Like that almost seems like a more advanced thing, even if you don't have sophisticated equipment. So I commend you.
Well, yeah, I don't know. The beers were okay. So
nope, you are our home.
People aren't
heroes.
As scared. People aren't as scared of starting at that point these days. Sometimes too, if they want to. I think years ago, at least when I was starting the homebrew in the ancient times, what it feels like now. Like people didn't know as much. There just wasn't as much knowledge about how to make those beers, and what people were scared of doing them. Like if you tried them, you would infect all the stainless steel that you have or something.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And now people know a little bit better, but it's still gutsy and still admirable to start there because. The turnaround time is longer and the results are not as certain in some cases, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I wonder if it's easier to do mixed culture fermentation at home versus, say, at the Rare Barrel, because you can sort of, and I've never done it at home because part of what Nate said and part of just because like I didn't want to wait very long, and I've had a lot of bad sour home brews, and it's like, it's like too much effort to make the wort and then to like put it down and do all, I just didn't even want to get involved in that. But like, it almost seems like you can, and maybe it's a good thing I didn't do it, because you can sort of be a little freer with it. I could just do this. It's going to be a sour beer anyway. It's fine. You know, I don't need to like really, but if you're making a Pilsner or a Kolsch, everything sort of feels tight all over your body while you're making. You're like, okay, I really can't fuck this up. I have to be really clean and really organized and whatever. But sour beer sort of feels a little chaotic, and I know it's not. It's probably, you know, more so, I would imagine, on the production side.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to keep track of for sure.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you went to Temescal and you learned clean beer, I imagine.
Yep.
Okay, so then you came back for the Hello Friend project. Were you one of those brewers that, you know, helps install all the equipment and do the side from the equipment stuff, or are you just like, I'm a process brewer guy?
I didn't really help at all. It was literally almost ready to go.
Nice.
There was a couple little minor things they were waiting on. And yeah, Tommy likes to give me shit for that they had to wait for years for it. And I just walked in and started going.
Just walk right in, yeah. Mash in and go.
You're the golden boy.
I was there from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. for 18 months straight and making sure everything was ready for you. And this is what you have to say.
For you. It was all for you, Stefan. Well, and, you know, that's why I asked, because nobody has ever had that experience of, like, basically, here's a brand new brew house and you don't have to touch it except to turn it on and make stuff with it.
Oh, brand new is I don't know, generous.
New to you. New yes, to, new yes. Us. Yeah, new right. To new to the thing. So what's the first beer you make on this to sort of get your feet wet?
We make gold.
We basically just did some gold barrel stock for the first couple until we felt comfortable, okay. Which was necessary because it took us several. The first two mashes were stuck because our mill was a little too tight, and so we had some super long days to get this really small amount of beer.
Yeah,
but, great way to get to know the brew house. Have fun with the stuck mash right away.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But by the third one, we were getting the hang of it, and so I think our fourth brew was an IPA, and it was fairly set at that point. And so I wouldn't say we're super comfortable with everything, but mm-hmm. we haven't been brewing very wide of styles at the moment. So what we have been doing, we feel some amount of comfort.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we have four IPAs to drink and I think they're all hazy. So I'm pretty, yeah, I guess.
I mean, we gave you two West Coasts, I hope.
I think, I don't know. I think maybe not.
Oh shit.
At least one. But yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm just going to harass you in general about it, but you know, that's what people are drinking. Clearly that is one part of the curve and the trend that I am not in front of. Is the IPA side of things, but you know, obviously, I'm not gonna shit on it, and that's why I got Nate on here. Number one, he's handsome. And number two, he's the IPA guy.
IPAs are unstoppable.
That's true.
We got to get into it.
You got to get into it. Right.
It'll be great.
Well, yeah. And I tell people, you know, the breweries that have been sending hazies and stuff in, I go, my vocabulary isn't really set for these beers, so I don't know how to talk about them. So I want you guys to tell me what I'm tasting. So that's what I expect out of you, Nate, a little bit too. It's help me figure it out. Cause I want to learn. I want to get the thing. I just don't, you know, it's not a style I seek out. You know what I mean? So my vocab is a little off, but, you know, anyway, should we just start drinking a beer now?
Yeah, let's do it.
We might. Yeah.
All right. Stefan, you and I were working on the lineup earlier, which is basically, let's do the West Coast first, and then everything else doesn't really matter.
Yep.
That's what we sort of settled on, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Here we go. West Coast. Ill at Ease.
Yeah.
That's it. The Till I Crumble is a West Coast double IPA, and I think we gave that to you, too.
Oh, yes, like you did do that. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, wouldn't you do? Oh, there it is.
Yeah. Check out that label, dude. That's a rad label.
My brother-in-law drew it.
Your brother-in-law drew it. Okay, nice.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing a lot to kind of promote local artists as well as people in the general community. So we're doing everything we can to source our label art at this point.
I like that, man. I think that's cool. And you have there you go, Eric Beltran. There he is, right there.
It's really cool. It's expected these days, especially people buying, you know, this kind of pint can format of IPAs from small brewery. They're expecting interesting art. So to have that as part of the brand to begin with is smart and it's fun. You can bring in people that you know who create art that you like and or go find them. You know, it's a good call.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like as important as the contents of the can are, I mean, it's kind of undeniable that branding is a big part of selling beer. So
totally.
I mean,
yeah,
we do what we can to promote the artists that are essentially kind of creating the face of this new brand for us, I guess.
It seems like you guys do an excellent job at creating buzz. Like I was going to order your beer online and it seems like it all got sold out in like a day. So congratulations there.
Thanks. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, the general reception is a little bit better than frankly I anticipated. I mean, I knew that IPA moved, but
honestly, we all have such a place in our hearts for Rare Barrel. So it's like, you already have that behind you. And then like, we're all just excited to figure out what you are doing next. So
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you guys tell me a little bit about Ill at Ease? What's in the hop profile or sort of like how you approach your West Coast IPA here?
So this was all Pilsner malt with a little bit of dextrose. And it's also all Mosaic, Mosaic Whirlpool, and then Mosaic in the dry hop split between cryo and pellets. And there was also actually the only non-Mosaic part is there's some CO2 extract at the beginning of the boil.
That's cool. Just for like a clean baseline bittering with less vegetal matter. That's not necessarily Mosaic specific at that point. It's just like clean IBUs essentially. It's a classic Mosaic profile. Like you could smell it almost from just opening the can before I could get it in the glass. I figured it was Mosaic, and certainly it is. It's got the tropical kind of, American New Zealand kind of profile right away. It's a classic Mosaic aroma. It's great. See, Nate, a really bright, bright, fresh Mosaic profile for sure.
I'm glad you're here because I would never have said any of that. smells awesome, man. It's that sort of melony.
Yeah, it's got berry melon. I mean, Mosaic's one of those hops that, as is appropriately named, can go so many different directions. I think you get a pretty full canvas in this particular lot that you guys are working with. It goes just slightly into the earthy, like dank territory of Mosaic, which I personally kind of like. But it's a really good Mosaic showcase. Very clean.
Yeah, and that mouthfeel is good too. It's not super dry. I mean, it's dry, but there's a roundness to the mouthfeel. I don't want to say creaminess because that sort of, I think is more geared for like the hazy IPA malt profile, but there is like a softness to it.
What's the ABV on this beer, Tommy or Stefan?
This is like in the
mid sixes or something.
Yeah. So it finished, I'd say, slightly higher than I was like planning for, but was actually okay with it. I was targeting finishing around 2 Plato, and it finished around 2.3, and I think it kind of actually works in this particular beer's benefit to make it a little smoother and rounder.
Would you prefer to keep it kind of at that range, or you want to try attenuating it a little further just to see?
I'd like, this was our first attempt at the style, so I would like to just, we're planning to do more things. So I brewed our second West Coast last Friday, and so I'm hoping we'll get slightly more attenuation, but we'll see.
You mentioned dextrose, if I remember correctly, too. So you're kind of driving that attenuation with the choice, basically, too. Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, I see. Okay. What I didn't ask, what I failed to ask, Stefan, is how long have you been making clean beers under the Hello Friend banner?
Well, I think our first ones probably came out in like April, Tommy, or May.
Yeah, April, May was the first round of like non-canned IPA that we produced. I think it was like a split batch that we brewed. Like Stefan mentioned, it was our fourth brew. We wanted to try as many different parameters as we could. So we did a 15 barrel, split it into 7 and 7, and two different dry hop treatments and yeast profiles and fermentation temps and everything like that, just to try to get as much understanding as we could out of one batch.
Yeah.
And then from there, we kind of just hit the ground running, I guess, for what we can do with our limited tank space.
So you are still playing around very much, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah.
Trying to figure it out. Would you say you're geared more for learning the styles and sort of understanding them versus, the tanks aren't spent up with, or the brew day isn't taken up with brewing like, golden for Rare Barrel. So I can just brew whatever I want. Like, it feels like you're progressing towards like really defining a style.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't help but tinker a lot I think sometimes to Tommy's chagrin, but
that's your like special talent. That's your superpower.
What do you mean? Just changing stuff every now and then?
Yeah. I mean, every time. I mean, sometimes too many things, but so far.
It's a good quality in a brewer, especially these days.
Well, you're a home brewer, yeah. Right? Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're very much trying to figure out what we're, you know, these are defined styles, but we're trying to figure out what our take on them is still. So,
yeah, sure.
And we only have three tanks and we try to can all three in each, like at a time. So it's brew, and then nothing for several weeks. And so trying to keep, to sort of maintain and build off of each one is a little bit of a challenge right now. And so sometimes, you know, sometimes I want to try a bunch of things and then I lose my nerve because I'm like, well, I'm not going to get to try it again. I don't want to mess this up, you know, but.
Oh, right. Because it's not going to be maybe several weeks before I get to take another run at this again.
Yeah. And also each beer right now, because of the circumstances of the COVID and stuff, is getting canned. So it's like, this needs to work out.
They all have to get sold. They all have to be on, basically, right?
Yeah. After or whatever, you know, or like, you know, we're fortunate that we can take some chances and make turn them into mixed culture beer, depending on how what doesn't go the way we want it to. But still, we try to meet the goals and timelines that we're shooting for.
Yeah. And
I think that's natural that you'd want to change stuff or try and modify. I mean, just really the basics of trying to dial this in, like maybe this many pounds per barrel on the dry hop side, or this tweaking of the ferment temp, or we're going to try and push things out a little bit this way or pull things in a little bit this way. As you get to know how everything works with that system and inside your brewery, you're going to want to do that. It's sort of natural at this point because you're beginning to define what the brewery is.
Yeah, know? Definitely.
So on these particular beers, the clear West Coast beers, not the hazy beers, you probably stick to maybe one yeast strain on that side and then a different yeast strain on kind of the other hazier beers, or maybe even mix it up with the West Coast beers too.
So far we've just used the Chico 01. We're using the diacetyl free version from Berkeley's.
Oh, cool. I've heard about this. Had good experiences with it so far. You like it?
Diacetyl.
No diacetyl. Nice.
A diacetyl free yeast strain. How does that, I mean, gene.
They're basically, crispering the precursors out so that it can't ever form. It's similar. I don't know if you've heard of ALDC, the enzyme you can use. It's similar to that, except they're building it into the pitch itself.
Super interesting.
It just never produces it at all. That's my basic, really like basic dumb understanding of it. But that's essentially what it means in the brew house.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I've not. It hasn't changed anything we've done. We still give the beers a lot of time and I still do force D tests before we crash it just in case.
Yeah.
So I really don't know, honestly, if it works or not.
But do you sense that there's any trade-offs in terms of maybe the amount of times you can repitch or certain temperature ranges, anything? Otherwise, it's
so far the trade-off is financial. It's just more expensive, but
yeah, understood.
It's not really a trade-off anymore at that point.
That's the most honest answer.
I mean, it's a good like safety harness, right? Where in case something doesn't get picked up in your forced diacetyl test or whatever, maybe it wouldn't be there anyways because it's first of all, I just want to say I knew that. I don't know what the term CRISPR means, but I knew it applied here somewhere. So I just want to say how smart I am. That's a pat on the back for me.
That's very auspicious of you. You can file it with auspicious.
Gene editing conversation.
Hell yeah. I'm basically going to have a TED talk tomorrow on it. That's how far we come. That is wild to me, man. I feel like Encino Man, where like I knew a set of things and then I hibernated for 4 million years and then came out and now everything's completely different and nothing what I knew is even really valid anymore. I would have no idea that they're even doing this in beer yeast.
It's this style of modern IPA brewing that's really pushing these kind of things, why ALDC became kind of a thing and why these sort of gene edited yeasts are becoming a thing. If people started struggling with that parameter a little bit more, and there's a lot of theories on why that probably happened. But to to have people develop products that essentially try and subvert the whole problem make a lot of sense. It's cool to hear. It's cool to hear that these guys, that you guys are using it, and we're trying it right now, and it seems to be working great. I get no hint of any D at all in this beer.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Not even close. Nothing like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's the whole point. That's why we're spending the money on them.
Yeah, this. I mean, the beer smells great. It's a good combo. You know, the hops you got going on are working really, really well. It's a very inviting beer.
You're kind of an orange and lime zest thing as it starts to warm up and open up too. It's really nice. That kind of gives like a hint of kind of a classic, like Centennial or almost a slight CDZ edge to it. But it's nice and complex with just one simple hop.
There's still that malt sweetness that sort of comes and like elevates it a little bit. You know, because like sometimes West Coast IPAs, when you're trying to grow this sort of profile, it can be a little too aggressive and a little too sharp. And I feel like the malt sort of backs that down a little bit.
This was all Pilsner malt, Stefan. Yeah.
Yep. Correct.
Nice. Yeah, that's a clean kind of, you know, simple but very familiar malt base. So when you get a little bit of that sweetness coming through, it's not a sweetness with a lot of biscuit or caramel or something like that. It's a very neutral kind of, you know, malt sweetness that's pleasing.
Was this your first West Coast recipe, or had you done another one before this?
Yeah, first one, I guess, that I made all the decisions on.
Okay. So. And how do you feel it came out for your first run?
I'm pretty, like I said, I'm happy with it. It wasn't exactly what I was targeting, but perhaps maybe for the better. So we'll see a couple iterations from here if it, you know, how it holds up. But
did you learn from it? I feel like that's where I want to go with this conversation. Like, what, because you're definitely figuring stuff out. What did you take from this?
For the next brew that I did, that we just brewed, but is just barely going, I did split up the Pilsner malt with Turo just to see what it be different to just have a little less of that.
Yeah.
The main things that I wanted basically tinker around with are just dry hop sort of parameters, you know, temperature, timing, and all that sort of thing. This was, Tommy can attest, I was like freaking out about the progression of it. It was just kind of started off kind of sluggish, and I was like, it's gonna be bad. I knew it. And it was kind of
started. Here, though,
so you sound like me, dude. It's like this is gonna fucking suck, dude. And then it comes out, you're like, yeah, I knew it was gonna be good.
Yeah. So by the, like, it started slowing down around like 3.5 Play-Doh. I was like, oh no, this can't be. So dry hopped it there, kind of hoping for more hop creep to bring it down, and it kept going, and where it ended up, like I said, was higher than what we were targeting, but it, I think, worked out fine. And so I was hoping, you know, to try just different timing to do it later, kind of get more yeast out in the future, maybe dry off at cooler temps. But for this one, because I don't think this necessarily presents for me in the aromas very like classic West Coast. Not necessarily in a bad way, but I just kind of, when I drink like a good West Coast, I'm like, why can't I do that? So trying to figure it out still.
I mean, you just started, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Teresa, so is Stefan, you know, in like 5 years, is it going to be, are the fears going to go away where it's like, oh, this isn't going to come out? Or do you still have that same problem where you go like, ah, oh, this beer, I don't know. I don't know anymore.
No, I have a really good feeling about what something is going to end up being like. Not to say that we don't make a beer and then we tweak it and we make it again and we tweak it. Like, we have some brands that we've done for 5 years and pretty regularly. So we've like tried to push them in the direction of what we want that beer to be. And it's never really done, but
like in the fermenter, when you pitch and you're like,
to know your system and how everything goes. I mean, you know, there might always be something you want to tweak, but you, like, there's rarely a time I would say, I'm not sure it's going to work out. Like, I know it's going to work out. It just is like, how is it going to work out? Like, how, what?
That's fair. I understand that.
What thing do I want to make incrementally better?
Yeah.
So I hope that you guys get to redo your beers, like that you can like really get into that particular beer and make it the best it can be. I think that's one of those things that's so hard. If like you're always trying to come up with something new and innovative, mm-hmm. like you want to carry that knowledge through into the next beer. I find it really satisfying with my, you know, slightly nitpicky way of being, I guess, that I can like keep doing that same beer and really keep tweaking it just enough so I can see the result. But
interesting.
I don't know. That's a question for once you've been around for a little while.
Tell me, are you guys going to keep the same names and go back to like, so are you going to rebrew this specific beer under the specific name, or is it going to be a different name every time, but, you know, slightly altering, with, you know, Stefan's tweaks?
I don't know. I mean, when I first started at Rare Barrel, we were making like 11 to 14 brands a year. Mm-hmm. And now we are making 55 to 65 brands a year.
Yeah. Well, Alex needs all those Aaron Sorkin references. Oh, exactly. His fucking names,
plug those
man.
In where he can. Yeah. It's just the market has shifted so far. It's like, it's hard to revisit something because people are already like, I've fucking had that. I don't need it again.
Yeah.
So whether it's like for personal development or not, it's like,
yeah.
From the branding and sales perspective, it's like we probably won't have the opportunity to revisit many things.
Okay.
But you can see that nugget of knowledge you get from that thing.
Oh, for sure. No, we'll make like
exactly
the same. It might not be the same beer, but
we'll make it like comfortable all the time or something like that. It'll be the same beer, same everything.
On the other side of that, as a consumer, like, you know, when I used to be able to go to Rare Barrel way more often, you know, than I do now, obviously. You sort of like, oh, is Sourtooth Tiger going to be back on? Or Map of the Moon going to
like
be back
beer?
On? I loved that beer.
Oh, great. We should make it again then.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the reason we're going to do it.
Yeah, and it was like those kinds of things where, you know, you sort of want those flavors to come back. I mean, I appreciate experimenting and I don't know why I said it like that, experimenting and trying new things, whatever, but there's also like part of me where it's like, I do want a revisit every now and then.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the two brands that you mentioned are things we've been making for, again, the past 6 years fairly regularly. So it would be cool if we could revisit things like this.
I'm just curious. Just,
the general IPA consumer is, they don't give a fuck, man.
They
want the whole thing, whatever the new picture is, they want to slap it on their fucking cooler and move on with their life.
They want the new
They don't seem to want the same beer twice. They want to tick them all on Untappd or something.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it is, which is unfortunate for sure. But like Teresa was mentioning, hopefully we can just draw from past experiences and make those beers that these people are collecting even that much more better.
You're dialing in parameters and not necessarily the same exact brand, I think, is what people are doing when they're iterating through IPAs for the current market.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
you're still learning. You're learning, but in different ways than maybe people would have done for dialing in the exact same brand with the same parameters. You know?
Right. I mean, the flagship model would be fucking amazing because I'm sure if Stefan had 2 years to really dial something in, it would be phenomenal beer. I don't know if we have that luxury, honestly.
It's weird to think about, but we are actually that brewery. You know, we have flagships, and one in particular that is, you know, it may not be anyone at the brewery's like favorite beer ever, but like we've been working on this beer for a long time. So I don't know. Like I guess I feel glad that we were able to do that. It's not for everybody.
No, maybe we should just do it, Stefan. You want to pick a brand and make it our flagship?
Yeah, just say screw you, customers. Like, just
well, you could do it with one, and then like rotate all the others. You
well,
know?
Like, yeah. On the one hand, it is. Sorry, go ahead, Stefan.
I was just gonna say, I think it depends how you choose to sell it, whether that works or not. Because, like when I worked at Temescal, they were doing a lot of distribution to the same bars and restaurants regularly, and their customers didn't necessarily want a different IPA. They wanted literally just so they made a beer called Temescal Pills and Temescal Hazy, and it worked for them. Mm-hmm. But the IPAs that they'd sell to like beer bars and shops, if it wasn't a new brand, then people didn't really want it after the, you know, it had to be new each time. And so I just, we're at the mercy of, you know, this unstable situation right now.
Yeah. It's almost like of the beer buyers too, to a certain extent. Like, I wonder how much of that is just them overreacting to the consumer demand and being like, oh, well, if you don't have anything new. But yeah, it definitely, I mean, we've had breweries on both sides of this conversation on this show in the past, where we have literally never produced the same beer twice. These are our four flagships, and this is what we're riding into the sunset. I mean, we had Kansas Territory Brewing on last week, and they're in a market that's 97% standard American lager, and that's their flagship beer, is a standard American lager. It's not an IPA. It's not a this. It's not a that. And they're trying to, like, chip away the Busch Light market, which is, like, the big beer in Kansas. And it was really interesting conversation because, like, how do you figure that out? But that wouldn't work, you know, here, where if, you know, you're on the West Coast and your flagship is, you know, I don't know, whatever, like the same brand, same name, the same everything. I don't think that would work nearly as well because of Untappd, you know, because of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the Rare Barrel has, I mean, we've made the same brands multiple times before,
sure,
but it's never the same beer. Honestly, there's no way we could reproduce what we do year after year. It's because the mixed cultures change, the amount of fruit we use has changed, a lot of things change. The parameters, like you're mentioning, are all the same. Like, it's a mixed culture saison base that we add a particular fruit to, but time spent in barrel, what happens, what flavor develops, we don't really have that much control over it, so we just present it as best as we can to the audience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and those are the changes that I think are interesting sometimes. Or the decisions. So, okay, I just cracked open the Till I Crumble, which is a West Coast double IPA with Amarillo, Simcoe, and Citra. Little skateboard dude, give him a little peace sign. Love it. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little about this beer, Stefan, Till I Crumble.
I guess to some extent this was also supposed to be building off of the beer we just had. And so this was all two row this time and with some dextrose. And this was bittered with Simcoe and bitter with Simcoe and then Amarillo in the Whirlpool and then dry hopped with Simcoe, Citra, and Amarillo. This one, I'd say, probably dried out more than I'd like it to have. And so I, you know, this was maybe a swing further, an overcorrection. So the next beer I was referencing that we brewed after it is trying to get somewhere between.
Okay. That makes sense.
Probably the thing, like I mentioned about maybe over tinkering, I had seen there's this enzyme that Lallemand produces called aromazyme. That's like glucosidase to sort of essentially just, I was like, maybe more biotransformation or something. So,
yeah,
we tried it, and I think that definitely contributed to the further attenuation.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know.
But we were all using to make brute IPAs back in the day. Glucosidase.
Back in the day.
Back in the day, a couple years ago.
Yes, 4 years ago.
There are a few of these, though, that are kind of even more recent twists on that same idea, I think. And I think the one you mentioned, Stefan, is probably one of those. Also, it's like Bierzyme Rapid, I think, is another one. They're basically like just trying to break apart the stuff that's there
in hops,
right? To give you potentially more, more aroma. But I guess it could have drive attenuation too, which is what you think may have happened in this particular case.
Think it just, in breaking up the hops, it just, you know, basically amplifies some of creep hop re-fermentation stuff we see.
Oh, interesting.
Super clear. Are you fining, filtering, or?
Both of these were biofine.
Biofine. Yeah, the aroma is a little more muted. It's still, you know, nice, complex, sort of definitely West Coast Amarillo, sort of Simcoe aroma. You get the hint of sort of like a more of an older school classic citrus. And then you get a kind of this like bridge between like Amarillo kind of being late 90s and Simcoe kind of being early 2000s, like in the best kind of way. And they hit that whole era of like, you know, craft brewing hop profile, none of the tropicals that kind of side of it. It's all kind of the classic, piney, citrusy kind of side of things. But yes, it does feel a little bit thinner than the first beer. I mean, not necessarily in a bad way, but the mouth feels a little bit leaner, a little bit simpler.
Yeah, but it still has a nice rounded quality too, which I think carries over from the first beer.
And because this is two row,
yeah,
there's actually a little bit more malt complexity. So even though it's a little bit drier, there's still a little bit more malt complexity there. And that, again, I think that kind of works well with the hops that you chose because they're once again kind of back or a little bit earlier era of, you know, American craft brewing when people were almost only doing those kind of beers of two row, right? Where you take a beer with Mosaic or a beer with Citra. That era of IPA and craft brewing, people were putting Pilsner malt in more often or experimenting with that at least. So the parameters are completely match sort of like an era of what I think drinkers expect from West Coast hop profile from those eras. And this presents it well.
Yeah,
well
sort of defines that, like when you call it a West Coast. Like if you say West Coast double, it has to have at least some of these boxes ticked that are in this beer.
And clean ethanol too, since this is well, how strong is this approximately?
This is a little over 8%.
A little over 8. Yeah, it's clean, very clean.
Yeah, definitely. And that bitterness is really just firm all the way through, man.
Was this bittered also with an extract or a?
No, like this is with pellets.
With pellets, yeah. Simcoe, you said.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's
kind of toying with whether we want that clean CO2 extract hop bitterness or if we want a little bit of that vegetal character that you get from this particular beer, and I don't know the answer yet. I don't think Stefan does either.
Yeah, one of those things you want to experiment with. I mean, for some people, it's about yield too. I mean, a smaller production facility, that's probably less of a big consideration, but a consideration nonetheless, because these are expensive beers to make.
Yeah, absolutely. But I love the fact that you guys are sort of figuring this out. You're learning, you're experimenting, you're
trying, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I don't know how much we're pulling from all this stuff we're doing, but
well, look, yeah, I guess Stefan could just be like, well, I don't know, I didn't really learn shit, but I'm going to say I did and adjust this ratio a little bit the other way. And then, you know, whatever, who cares? It's just fine. It's just IPA. No one cares.
It's true. Yeah,
but I mean, obviously that's not what's going on, but and that's why I think what you guys are doing with, you know, the clean beer side, you know, versus the sour beer side is you're experimenting, and there's more room for that. There's more repeatability. There's more chances to experiment, even though you have to work that into the production of the base beers for the rare barrel. You can still kind of play around and it's just an opportunity to learn something else. And I don't know. I think that's really neat because it's not a thing you see normally unless it's like a pilot system for an established clean beer brewery. You know what I mean? We're like, oh, there's like you get one turn on the pilot system to work out a recipe or whatever. But you can sort of define where you're going. And Stefan, you were saying that you're sort of trying to still just figure out what your approach to West Coast IPA is going to be. I think that's neat because I don't know how many people get a chance to do that for a brewery, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're fortunate that the brand is sort of, we're approaching it as like, this is just a bonus on top of the rare barrel. The rare barrel is established and, you know, we're have that going. And so we can just try these things on top of it as long as we're being responsible. So it's largely Tommy and I just kind of, what do you think we should do? Well, each time. And so for now, at least we have that flexibility.
That's neat. I think that's a cool place to be.
You have three tanks. Are they all 15 barrel?
Two 15s and one 30.
All right. Do you have any like room for expansion?
We do.
And are taking off? I wouldn't say if. But...
They're on the way.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Yeah, they're literally in the mail, is what I've heard.
Yeah, they're on the Ever Given.
Yeah. Right. Well, we've ordered three more 30 conicals and then two more 30 brights. So we've got a little pad of like 8 tanks to build out. Delivery date is late November, so hopefully we get them installed by December, and then 2022 is the year of IPA for the rare barrel.
There you go, Stefan. You're gonna have your opportunity in the sun to shine and installing tanks. And Tommy will get to sleep in. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, everybody. We're gonna be right back with the boys from Hello Friend and also Nate and Teresa. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
segmented, demented, fermented. Fermented.
It's the session.
Thanks for hanging on, everybody. We are back with the fellas from Hello Friend, which is, of course, associated with the Rare Bear, as we like to call those boys over there at the Rare Barrel. And Nate, let's go, dude. We're gonna pop a beer. We're getting to hazy territory now.
Let's do it. Let's go hazy. What are we starting with here?
Well, so I think we're gonna do we have two hazies to get through, and then I want to finish up with, and then we're gonna take a break. And then maybe finish up talking some sour beer, because I got a sour beer or two to open. So I don't know. What do you think, man? You my dreams are weird. How about that one?
Sure, they are. Yeah.
Nate, do you have that one too?
I don't.
You don't have that one?
No.
Oh shit. Okay. Well then, what do you have? Tell me what you have.
I have Wiggly Trip.
Wiggly Trip. Let's do that one instead.
And I have Nothing's Never Forever.
Wiggly Trip. Sorry to pull an audible.
Never Forever.
Nothing's Never Forever.
Yeah, it's great. These names are awesome.
Yeah.
I like the name of the brewery and the approach of it is good. The fact that people are kind of lukewarm on the name sometimes makes me like it even better. It's like friendly and blunt at the same time. It's well done.
That's
it's
a fair way to put it. Yeah. The names are all just the same level of trash. So it's
In 10 years, this is how we're going to be trolling beer drinkers. It's just like overly, obvious names and super nice and whimsical. Wiggly Trip. Tell me about your hazy beer Wiggly Trip, please.
It is. So we basically do pretty similar malt bill with the hazy IPAs each time. And normally we do two row, but Pilsner malt as the base, but this one was two row. And so it's mostly two row with, well, not even mostly, 25% wheat and, I'm realizing how incorrect my recipe sheet is. It's a lot of malted oats and some malted wheat and the rest two row.
Okay.
And you know, my recipe combo sheets too. Sometimes I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't add up to 100.
This was Mosaic World. Hop additions until the Whirlpool. It's about a pound and a half per barrel of Mosaic in the Whirlpool at about 170 is the temp of the Whirlpool.
Okay.
And then it was dry hopped with Mosaic pellets and cryo, as well as Motueka at the end of fermentation.
Okay, so no hops pre-Whirlpool.
Correct.
The very modern way to make these beers. I think that's some of the go-to methods that people use in doing, producing some of these. And I think works really well for you here. This is great.
I think our beers, our hazy beers have been on the drier end of the spectrum, and I think that works okay, not having any like earlier bittering additions, and our dry hop quantities have been fairly large. So kind of just the combination of all those. Right, they have. Yeah, I mean, not to Tommy, but this is the one thing where Tommy, the bigger dry hops, and I like less, but
compromise. All right. Yeah.
Oh, this is good. This is good. So yeah, it depends on how expensive and how they're being sourced, I guess, too. Or does that? It's also dependent on what kind of impact you want. Less is more, or more is more.
More is always more.
I'm always more of more. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm in the 8.5 pounds plus per BBL range. Stefan's in the 4.5 range.
Oh wow! Yeah, that's a good split, man. What is this? Yeah. What is this having? And which way did we go? Did we go Stefan or did we go Tommy on this?
This is in between. This is six.
Okay.
Yeah. We compromise. Stefan's a good
way
guy
to split the difference.
Yeah. That's very good, man. I appreciate that.
And part of that is also cryo. And so they say you can consider that almost double or whatever, but.
Oh, okay. You can use half as much to achieve the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it's presented and sold to the brewer. So
is that what you see, on the brew house side, where it's is that actually like you can use it as a double replacement or does it?
I mean, we haven't really tried it that way. Okay. We just always like thought like, well, this is a bonus here.
Yeah, pretty much. So we hit the 6 pound per barrel threshold, and then if it happens to be cryo, fucking great. So it should be a little more pow.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You're okay. Getting that 1.5 to 2x, you know, multiplier going on at that sense. Why not?
Yeah.
The six is still a six though. That doesn't change basically.
Don't tell our finance guys, but that's what we're doing.
This is where I was going with that question. Thank you. That was sort of the idea. I'm like, none of you guys are trying to write those checks. Okay, great.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, the beer smells great, man. I think I'm understanding the aromatic side of the hazy IPA, because you definitely do get a different aromatic than out of this beer and how you make it versus just a normal IPA or any other beer. You know, it's a very soft and round aromatic, and it's like there's more.
It's like
more,
you can almost smell that side. Oat. You can almost smell that oat and wheat that's in the beer, right? Even in the aroma, not just tasting it, of course.
Yeah, I think oat malt is pretty prevalent in these beers, that all of the ones are hazy beers. It definitely contributes a lot just to the whole beer. Sometimes for me, it's a little too much, but I think it's kind of necessary for the way we're doing it, at least.
And I know this
expected flavor and expected quality of the style is a mouthfeel. It has a flavor. It definitely contributes that extra protein content contributes to what hop particulate and hop stuff gets left in the overall beer, I think.
Yeah. That's
what the drinker expects.
Was this your first hazy, or what? Do you remember what
the first one was? No, this is the second one that we had, and it was probably like the, I don't know, fourth or something.
Oh, okay. Did you say
something like that, right, Tommy?
Yeah. I think it's the fourth one we made, if you count those like trial batches that we were doing.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a different yeast strain than the West Coast beers we had, the first two. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the diacetyl free London 3, also from Berkeley East.
Nice. So getting a little more ester profile, getting a little bit what you want out of the London 3 strain, but again, has the hopeful benefit. And I think I'm definitely getting that here. I'm not getting any diacetyl at all without producing any D or D precursor stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you do a different dry hop sort of technique or regimen with the hazy stuff versus your West Coast? Kind of a similar.
Each one has been slightly different, but I mean, in general, if I'm remembering, this one was just generally towards the end of fermentation. You know, like, I think if I'm remembering, it's kind of like that last. The situation I was describing where fermentation was starting to slow down a lot higher than I expected. And I was like, oh, please, please don't stop.
you think it's going to fail. And Tommy knows again, it's not going to fail.
Right? Yeah.
So very much so. Dry hopped around 5 Plato, and it went all the way down to like 2.7.
Right.
And so, but it was like almost, it was getting close to stable around 5. And so I was concerned.
You're a little concerned it's just going to conk out and stay there, right?
Yeah.
People do like hazy beers a little bit on the sweet side, but that's probably a little more than you would have wanted at that point.
Yeah. I don't know. My perspective on that is you can make drier hazy IPAs as long as you've never made a sweeter one. As soon as you try to, you can only go one way. If you try to make them drier from where they were, people are going to say it's not sweet enough anymore. But
yeah, that's a fair point.
And they only know us in this range so far.
Yeah, that said, and the way you describe this, and thank you for that background and approach, I think, and it's really good, and I've had this is the second time I had this beer, and it's coming across even with a slightly bigger mouthfeel than when I had it on Saturday, but it leaned more towards what some people would describe as like a West Coast hazy. And I do like that term, because it's not as like a super luscious, like massive sort of mouthfeel. It's a little bit more, leans a slightly drier and a little bit more what I would consider like drinkable. I mean, those super massive ones are fun too, but you know, maybe want to have a couple of glasses of one that's a little bit slightly more drinkable, I think. So you lean that way, and I think it works really well in this beer.
Yeah. I think this is where Tommy and I like it. And so we're going to try to hold out as long as we can to sort of make it that way.
And not necessarily go even bigger, bigger and sweeter.
Yeah. Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, one thing that's that's been a challenge for us is that the pace that we're brewing at, like I mentioned, we're brewing three times and then not brewing for a while. So it's hard to maintain yeast that way. We haven't been able, we can't really harvest yeast and keep it around. So having, dialing in the pitch rate that we'd like to get the attenuation we'd like has kind of been difficult. When I came in, something that Tommy had been doing at the Rare Barrel was when they get a pitch in from the lab, they'd make basically a half barrel with DME, just starter of it. And then they'd be able to then do a cell count and, you know, determine the pitching rate. And so I think this was the last beer that we did that with. And so we were doing pretty low. What was it like 350,000?
Yeah, we're looking for like 300,000 to 400,000 cells per mil per degree Play-Doh for a lot of the stuff that we were doing in the hazy world.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the bodies to do that anymore, frankly. There's a lot of labor involved with getting those cell counts.
No, I think this is a really important snapshot of what you guys are doing, because you can't make beer every day or every week. You're having to work with a new pitch almost every time and then get it to where you want it to be. Hopefully, if you have the time and you have the resources, do it was basically a larger starter. And many homebrewers, of course, identify and recognize that and then get the exact cell count that you would want, ideally, and then pitch off of that. But you're not able to do 2, 3, 4 brews a week, and then what some breweries can do and then repitch and pitch that way. So you're having to try and adapt and deal with the parameters that you have. That given, the beers are great. I think because those are expensive beers and you're having to buy pitches more often, you want to make sure that they work for you.
Yeah. Well, so you'll see the next beer, My Dreams Are Weird, or I Have Weird Dreams. That one, that was one where we just did the, straight from the lab pitch straight in without doing any kind of starter or trying to get a cell count. And we got quite a bit more, even more attenuation. So we're kind of still fine tuning how we can do that until we're brewing more. We have a more regular brew pace.
That is a heck of a handicap, on not only your progression as a brewer, but just the brand in general too. I mean, like you said, you have three turns to do this. And then once you're just right at you sort of got your vibe going, then you got to stop and switch gears entirely.
Yeah, I complain about it all the time.
You should. I'm gonna start complaining for you. I'm gonna start texting Alex. Yeah, you let me know when you gotta stop, and I'm gonna.
We'll give you a venue to complain about it right here.
Yeah. Well, and you guys are gonna start your expansion, and then this problem's gonna go away, and you're gonna have a different problem, which is trying to figure out how to crop your hazy yeast and either keep it hazy or crop it in a reasonable amount of time, or.
It's going to be something.
Really figure out what your yeast strategy is going to be to run different yeast strains in the brewery. And I mean, you'll have my problems basically.
I don't want those problems.
Yeah. Stefan, will the new tanks help in this, where you can, then pump out more beer for the sour side, and then you can actually have more time to play with IPA side, which is not the clean beer side. It's the sour beer side and the IPA side.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
there's some waters going.
I think it will. The main thing, kind of what Teresa's alluding to, we will have to figure out how then, if we can harvest, how we will, because so far we've been kind of dry hopping without worrying about what that would do to harvest, because we aren't harvesting.
Oh, so, right. Yep. Okay.
From what I've heard, a lot of hazy IPA brewers these days are dry hopping are dropping the temp to 60 and then harvesting so that they can, and then, get yeast that way. We haven't done a colder dry hop yet, but I think we will this week.
Just try it out before you absolutely have to.
Also, that the other beer that they have, that was one where I was describing where I was going to do it, and then the last one was like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't like the result.
Like you said, you don't want to change so many things at once that you don't know what was the effect of the one change that you did make. So I definitely recommend biding one's time with this you know, we've kind of gone through that lately because we had to change one of our yeast strains that we used all the time. And so we've had some growing pains with this, like, you know, not all yeast strains that are set up for hazy beers really keep beer hazy. Like, that has a lot to do with it. You can drop a beer clear with the choosing the wrong yeast. So we're kind of at the tail end of the little R&D we had to do, but yeah, the process is, to me, it's very important because that will determine your brew schedule. It'll determine, like, you know, how much beer you're going to make. And if you're trying to maximize that, it's an important thing.
Yeah, for sure. This particular strain we started with, the London 3 strain, has been pretty good for hay stability in that respect. But I've been through that at my previous job, and Tommy had some trials with that, with beers with like large dry hops still somehow dropping bright in the keg or package. And
the worst. It's like, all you want is, and the beer tastes phenomenal, by the way. Like, even if your hazy beer clears up, it still tastes wonderful. It's just like, oh, do it.
Yeah.
It's like the inverse of the problem everyone was having.
It's nice and bright and clear. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, that sounds like, you know, a lot of work, and I'm glad I don't have to figure it out. Because it sounds like smart work, and I can't really do smart work. Nate, let's open. So the last one you have is Nothing's Never Forever, right?
Yes, indeed.
Let's crack that open. Let me show that.
Let's check it out.
The label, you got some, for all you feet fans out there, some feet. Got some toesies.
Oh, you brought it up. We weren't sure whether people would like it or hate it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, would people hate it?
I mean, I don't love feet.
Oh, it smells a little cheesy.
Friends with a major, like, foot aversion.
Yeah, I mean, right. I don't love feet either, but I mean, I respect them.
I respect the people that love them.
Yeah, see, there you go. Now you're being an ally, Tommy, and I appreciate that. This is Frederic Mati from Amsterdam.
Yeah, it's one of the few artists that we were able to get in contact with, not in the immediate area. They reached out well before we had this whole project going, and then once we had the HelloFram brand going, we asked them if they wanted to contribute.
That's cool.
And he sent us a pair of blue feet. I'm like, all right, we'll fucking use it.
Hell fucking yeah, dude. Yeah, the last one for Wiggly Trip was Professor Jelly from Oakland.
Yeah, regular guy. Literally a regular in our tasting room. And
he's just a normal guy.
To be an artist, yeah. And he wanted to be a part of our brand because
that's neat.
He likes what we do, and we were happy to facilitate.
It's funny, yeah, it's only, I think your brand is maybe the third I've ever seen listing the artist on the labels. And yeah, I think, like, that's really, before, really cool.
It's just like, we're not drawing this. We don't have a marketing team that's drawing all the skeletons and things like that. So
yeah,
we should do what we can to promote the artists that are making the brand for us, frankly.
Yeah. I think that rules. All right, let's tackle Nothing's Never Forever. So how are these beers different, Stefan? How did you approach, you know, are they the same base beers?
And they're just dry hop different? No, this one's a little bit higher gravity and has the base was split between Two Row and Maris Otter, but it also has some white wheat and malted oats as well, like the other one did.
Okay.
This one was Citra Whirlpool, similar, like, low temperature Whirlpool, and dry hop with Simcoe, Mosaic, and Citra. Yeah, this one, I guess, is somewhat notable. We used, so all these beers we've been doing have been, we've gotten the yeast from Berkeley yeast, and this one, they did some more gene editing, and they took the Sactois strain and basically made it non-diastaticus. So it doesn't keep fermenting. And so we tried it out and it does the opposite. It does not attenuate very well.
Which is perfect for the style. But it was a complete 180 from what we were expecting. Like, because the shit should dry out to like bone dry, but instead it was like,
I see. Okay.
Or Play-Doh finishing or something like that.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
Even with the hop like
reefer. Even with hop grape, yep.
Wow.
It's immediately evident. Like, the mouth feels bigger and it's really sweeter, but it's not necessarily in a bad way at all. This is what people expect of the style, especially if you're getting into an even stronger version of it. You know, when you have all that to support even more of a complex hop profile, you got, you know, three different hops you're playing around with in this beer. Well, and you got a little bit more of a presence of like that polyphenol as a result of that, you know, which I think people want to expect that for the beer, and it works. Well, because it's sweet, then you have the polyphenol that kind of balance it a little bit.
Yeah. I think more of the oat character comes through too, or there's like a toasted oat quality that's happening in here.
And you got maris otter too.
That I like.
Yeah.
I actually like it. If you could turn this into like a 5% beer, I would be all over it. But that malt profile, and I don't know, you know, like I was telling you guys before the show, my vocabulary isn't as such where I necessarily know what I'm tasting with these particular beers because they're so out of my realm. But I actually really enjoy what I'm having here, and I can't tell if it's, you know, what's coming from the malt or the hops, or if it's some interplay in between, or the yeast or whatever. Everything on that scale is so kind of new to me, but it tastes more like malt. And then those hops are kind of reinforcing those flavors underneath, and the malt sort of comes through at the end along with the hops, but it's not necessarily malt. It is like an oaty, toasty thing. What is that? What am I doing? Know. You don't know? I mean,
also, like one of the last beers that we had, like our aggressive salt additions, right, Stefan?
Yeah. So we started out doing targeting 400 ppb for chloride to 200 for sulfate, and we've kind of backed off. The first ones, I couldn't really tell what was rough in terms of like just too minerally versus rough, like the what Nate was referring to, like polyphenol, or rough in terms of like these highly dry hop beers are hard to get to finish in a reasonable pH. And so all these things are questions in my mind. What's what?
No, thank you. That's a really interesting point, though. What's an ideal pH for something this big and complex?
I mean, I keep trying to get it to like in the 4.4, 4.5 range. This one actually did finish around 4.5. I think that's just this particular yeast strain goes a lot lower than the London 3 we'd been using to where that finished at. I'm starting to do some acid additions with the dry hop to mitigate some of the pH increase, but I was too worried about overdoing it, and so now I'm trying to up it. But for this one, like I said, the pH I think was a reasonable finishing pH, but it still presents a little rough to me, and so I think I just think it had to do with having such high mineral additions.
And those mineral additions are mineral, that kind of range of mineral additions were ones you want for hazies in general. That was your initial approach on doing hazy stuff. And that wasn't a mineral addition you did on the West Coast stuff.
Correct. No, the West Coast was a lot more. Well, this, I think, was just kind of a tip from a brewery, right, Tommy? And so.
Yeah, like I was saying, it's like most of the foundation for our IPA production at this point was developed from all the collaborations we had done with our sour IPA stuff in 2019. So these benchmarks are things that we had kind of gleaned from all those projects we had done with other breweries. Mm-hmm. Obviously, 400, 200 is fucking enormous, but we kind of have worked ourselves back from that point. So it's been a good starting point. But we've definitely found that a little bit less goes a little bit further.
It was a baseline and a starting point is better than nothing.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. Something you could dial in and navigate as opposed to zero, right?
And for sure. We're not entirely sure whether this like slaking mouthfeel comes from the mineral addition, or whether it's a pH issue, or where or when we're dry hopping. So there's a lot of variables that we don't really understand at this point, and hopefully we can figure out before we really get the ball rolling.
I feel like the ball's rolling.
Yeah, that said, it's still really good. Very enjoyable.
Thank you.
Bigger mouthfeel. It's got bigger complexity kind of all around versus all the other beers, you know, and you got a lot of different malt choices there and a lot of different hop choices, and I think it works.
Sweet. Fucking great to hear.
Well, I would say, like, if you have a beer, it doesn't even have to be your beer. You can, you know, do a bench test where you set up calcium chloride and calcium sulfate, and at a certain concentration, and add certain amounts to the beers in front of you. And you can actually, we really learned a lot from doing that way back when, just to try to dial in, like, okay, what do we want a West Coast beer to taste like, mineral wise? What do we want? Like, as long as you know what you're starting with, it can really be educational, kind of take a step out of, you know, the trial and error.
That sounds like a great Tuesday morning.
Yeah, Stefan, what are you doing tomorrow morning? That it sounds like. No, that's a cool little blurb there, Teresa. I mean, you know, it sounds. I don't know that I would have ever thought about doing that. Just like dosing these.
I just want to point out that it works. I mean, yeah. it really
sure.
It does change the beer, and you can taste it after the fact. It doesn't have to be in process. So
interesting. All right. Well, let me tell you what. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap things up here with Hello Friend and by drinking a sour beer, which I think is appropriate. But then also I want to talk about how you guys interplay with the sour side, you know, and all that kind of fun stuff. And then we'll let you go. So hang on, everybody. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
It's time to talk beer and chew bubble gum.
And we're all out of gum.
The Session.
Hey, thanks for hanging around, everybody. We're about to wrap things up with Hello Friend. And what I want to do is really just flex on Nate and Teresa, but I wanted to open a sour beer and talk a little bit about the rare barrel and, of course, and what's going on there, and more importantly, the interplay between the two breweries. Tommy, when you were handing me beers, I think you said Steep Ravine was new?
Yeah, Steep Ravine was the first club beer for this year, and we were fortunate enough to win a bronze at JBF for it. So
I think we should open that one.
Maybe we'll make it again for the general public.
Yeah, congrats on that, by the way. That's
appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, if I recall, it's second use Chenin Blanc grapes that we ended up dry hopping with Mosaic. So wow. Really, how could you not win at least a bronze with that?
Right, it's faded. Don't worry, I'll use my founder.
Wow, look at this guy.
You know, bottle opener. It's fine, don't worry about it.
But yeah, that beer turned out well. It's been a staff favorite for, again, the past year or so. So we were very excited to see that it was the only one that had meddled.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. Congrats on that. I love that you're doing the small format bottles too. The 375s, I think, is what that is.
Like we were talking about, the consumer is looking for variety. It's hard to buy variety if every bottle that you sell is $25 to $30. So we shrank it down a little bit. So now it's only $15.
The my makeup tutorial light is too bright. It's blowing out the white label. But what is
it's notoriously hard to read. Don't worry about it.
What is the design on there?
Oh no, this is this year. So if I'm not mistaken, every beer that we've made for the club this year is named after a particular trail in the Bay Area for hiking.
Oh, cool.
So this one was Steep Ravine. I don't know exactly where that is, but it sounds like a great place and. Yeah. Where people want to hike or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Fuck it. It sounds like a place that I won't ever go because steep is in the word and I'm not trying to.
Yeah, you know. I don't want to be there either.
Yeah, flat ravine, I'll be there. Steep ravine, maybe. No.
That one, we've had Albany Bald as well as Mount Diablo. There's one more left that we haven't really figured out what we're going to be making for it quite yet. We have some running ideas, but. Maybe a tangerine mixed culture beer, dry hop with mandarin of Bavaria or something like that, just to really amp up the citrus character. But
that sounds fun.
Yeah, it's up in the air. We have 2 months to figure it out.
Yeah. So was the wort from this produced by Stefan and the IPA side?
I don't think this one was. So this was our first club beer of this year. So,
this was
21st Amendment, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
For the majority of 2019, we were getting our wort from 21st Amendment in 100 barrel batches. And what we were doing is just splitting it in 33, 33, 33. Mm-hmm. So we put it to oak. And then hit it with a variety of mixed cultures, and then we would have our blending inventory from that perspective.
Okay.
The base beer was the same, but the inoculant was always different, so it created a reasonable variety to blend with.
Okay. And how much of the base beer is now being produced from the clean side?
Oh, from the clean side. Not much. I mean, everything we produce now is basically in-house. We've been thinking about trying to re-up some of our inventory with more 100 barrel batches from 21st Amendment just because mm-hmm. of time, labor, you know, general business bullshit. But a lot of the sour stock is basically been produced in-house for the past 6 months now.
Wow. Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
That's cool. Stefan, how is that? How is that transition? And we talked a little bit about it, but I mean, that's got to be sort of, I mean, you're coming into a system you don't know anything about. You're learning how to do all these beers, and then you have to stop also to then produce base beer for the sour beers, and then go back and then forth and whatever. How do you keep everything straight in your head? Are you just a good note taker? Or for me, I think I would just get confused. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I added a bunch of hops to this. I know this is a golden base, but now it's a hoppy one. Deal with it.
I'm not a good noter, but I'm trying. I have a notebook that I don't write notes in, but it's on the table every brew.
So it's there. You know, sometimes I'm convinced that just the fact that it's there means that you'll remember whatever you have to write down.
I don't know. I mean, we have a pretty good thorough brew sheet. Mm-hmm. That we use that I completely took from Temescal.
Like,
I
oh no, you told him.
I didn't literally even change the, so they do everything in metric. I didn't even change the metric stuff. I just write in like BBL and things on it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ryan. You did all the work for us. You appreciate it.
I think this is Stefan's MO. I don't have to do with anything with the brew sheet. I just adjust, come in. Tommy already built my brewery for me. I just come in and do it. Like, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah. He's the show pony. I'm happy to serve.
But so that said, the brew sheet literally has everything on it. So the only thing I write notes on are maybe go slower next time on this or something like that. Because
okay, interesting.
Our brew house is, like Tommy said, it's old. It's super old.
Yeah,
it's from like the early 90s, and everything is very like brew by feel, which is not my style. I'm a, like, you know, I'd like to have a flow meter here, or like, you know, some sort of read to be able to, you know, things to ensure that it's like the same every time.
Yep.
Instead, I just literally turn the pump slightly faster and slightly slower as we're mashing in. It's like controlling the strike water, and like, so we have the gross case above with just like a thing that you pull open and close. So, and I have a line, a Sharpie line that I drew, like, go to this line,
bro. Yeah. So you're like 80% of the breweries in America.
You have the fancy homebrewing system that you never had at home. Now you have it there.
Exactly.
That's right. What we're doing is glorified homebrew. We have a giant igloo cooler that holds.
I mean this in the most respectful way. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, if you've seen our Instagram, you've seen us literally standing around it stirring because there's no rakes or anything like that. And Anyhow.
Man, sour beer does not buy you much equipment these days. That's crazy.
Not this time, at least. Yeah. But no, it's getting the job done. Like, I still tell everyone about it, how much I dislike it, but I'm making it.
Every waking moment.
But no, it's not really that hard, like, in terms of doing stuff that differently. But the only thing we're just kind of trying to figure out what we want to do, because for the, you know, the approach when you're having contracting wort, it's easier to just set it and forget it. Like, this is what they do. in our experience, every time you tell them to make a change, they kind of sometimes don't, or it doesn't go, you know, whatever the case.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of trying to try slight, you know, mostly just with hopping, but like doing things a little differently.
Yeah.
But it's sure. still very early. We haven't honestly brewed that many batches. Just trying to figure out what is the most efficient way of doing it.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of, I know I say we don't have a lot of tanks on the clean side, but we also don't, we have a very unusual tank setup. If you've ever been to the Rare Barrel,
mm-hmm.
it's 200 barrel fermenters, 230 barrel fermenters, and then like two smaller brights and a 5 barrel conical. It's like very, okay. so we're, it's all over the place. It made sense once upon a time, and now we're yep. just kind of making it work.
It looks more like a conical showroom.
Than, yeah.
it's like, here are all the choices you could get. I mean, if you wanted to do these.
We literally have a
batch. You're going to do like 7 brews to fill the 110 barrels. Yeah. Fermenters.
Never fill those.
That's hard.
The beer in the current in one of the 100 barrels right now doesn't make it to the side port.
Hell yeah. Yeah, dude. You know, I love these stories. I love hearing about it because it sort of takes the sheen off of the romance of brewing in a good way. You know, it reminds everybody that it's still just, you know, people putting grain in water and figuring it out as
you're adapting and figuring it out as you go along.
Yeah, but we sort of have this like overly romanticized or overly like, I don't know, streamlined view of how beer is made and how wort is made, you know, I guess for you know, to be more pointed with it, but like of everything just works and you know exactly where it goes and it does this thing and this is what we do and this is our process. But sometimes there is, the process is just to get it done. It sounds like.
Oh, for sure. Everything's a goddamn mess, but we make it work. That's why we do what we do, I guess.
Yeah. When you, cause you said you weren't really harvesting yeast. Now when that time comes, are you concerned about the, you know, cross contamination between the sour side and your side, or is that even a factor?
It's kind of what, Nate was talking about before. It's like, stainless is stainless, man. Our chemicals will nuke the shit out of everything we're going to be working with. We really don't have to worry as much about cross-contamination as so many old-school breweries have been. Not to say that it's not a big deal, but plenty of successful breweries, like, I don't know, Almanac, have done a lot of the clean and sour stuff in the same system and been very successful doing that, so I don't see why we can't do the same.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you have separate equipment, like separate hoses and everything too? Or
separate plastic pieces is the main
part. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So stainless for sure. You can, again, nuke the shit out of it and go scorched earth about it and not worry about it. Plastic is different. So all the EPDM is definitely segregated for better or worse.
Excellent. Well, getting back to Steep Ravine here real fast. This is an excellent beer. Definitely bronze. Not, I wouldn't give it any more than that.
Silver at best.
So, no, bronze at best. You did your best and it was a bronze.
This is JP's way of saying no silver or gold were awarded in this category.
Yes, right, exactly. This is a very good beer. It's not great. There were no other great examples, so this is just still a good beer. It's great, man, because sometimes you can get these like sour beers that are in, you know, old wine barrels or whatever, and it's sort of like the wine has been oxidized and you get that sort of oxidized wine thing going through, but this doesn't really have that at all. You definitely get a wine characteristic, but it's not, it's a sour, it's just like when you're doing you know, barrel aged like imperial stouts, right, or like bourbon imperial stouts, where it's a beer that that was in a barrel with bourbon in it, and that's the sort of like the order things should go. And you know, sometimes with those, it can be like, wow, this is bourbon with some beer added to it. But this is sort of the same way. It's like, it's very clearly a sour beer. There's some wine character to it. And then there's the oak sort of tying it all together. It's a great beer. And I admit, I haven't had a Rare Barrel beer since, you know, pre-pandemic. And,
you and me, same guy.
And this is, this is great. It's a great beer.
Thank you. I mean,
that one in particular, like I mentioned before, it was the byproduct of a different wine beer hybrid project we have been working on. So we did our typical dry hopping process where we took like a very clean saison, dry hopped that in excess, and then blended that with our mixed culture Chenin Blanc mixed culture beer. What we found is like whenever we dry hop anything that has any sort of acidity is it's very pickly and gross and not appealing. So we tried to mitigate that by dry hopping a clean saison and blending that into our mixed culture sour beer.
Oh, interesting. Okay. It works.
Oh, yeah. It seems like it's worthy of a bronze, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and how was GABF? Like, were you guys there?
No. Like Teresa was mentioning, the CBC GABF thing was something we very much wanted to take a part of, but none of us really knew how to approach it at this point, just because, I mean, everyone's stringent, but Berkeley is like extra stringent. So we didn't want to travel and then come back and then be like, you can't go to work for 2 months kind of bullshit or whatever. So we unfortunately did not get to take the opportunity of being a part of either of those events.
Did they even have a live GABF section? I don't even know.
I don't know.
It was on. It was live streamed on the Brewing Network there.
Jamie. The award ceremony. Yeah, no. Exactly, Teresa. Yes.
What's the Brewing Network? Is that a new thing? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
It was. Yeah, it was live streamed. I didn't watch it, unfortunately. But I'm just wondering if there was like an audience. Is what I mean, or if it's just. Oh, like, yeah,
we were all there. I mean, it was. Oh. And by the way, I cheered super loud for you guys. So
thank you. That makes two of us.
And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the brewery attendees went to the award ceremony. They did it like they have in previous years in the big theater there.
Nice.
Yeah. It was kind of like old times. It was pretty awesome.
That's good.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right, fellas. Well, I'll let you go, guys. Where do people go to find out more about HelloFriend? Is it? Do you have your own Instagram handle and your own webpage and stuff, or is it just through the Rare Barrel?
A little bit of both. We don't have our website up and running yet, but it's like the Instagram handle is at HelloFriendBeer. And then obviously the Rare Barrel is our lifeblood. So please go there.
Okay. Stefan, what's coming up next for HelloFriend? What do you got in the future? More IPAs
Well, we have two IPAs and a lager with wet strata wet hops.
I'm okay with that. I like a wet hop beer, nice. Dude. I don't know. There's a lot of hate about wet hop beers and pumpkin beers. I like them both.
Well, there's no pumpkin in this one.
But I hate it then. I fucking hate it. And it's a lager. Like, yes, I'm all about that life.
So it'll be that, a West Coast IPA and a hazy IPA. So
fucking goddamn.
That's our future. Yep.
Apparently it's my future too. Yeah. All right.
But they should all be great. I hope so.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt. I have no doubt. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Nate, before we let you go, man, I do want to bring up the fact that you are faction famous, which is a term that I'm just coining right now. You brewed a Kolsch with Roger Davis of Faction Brewing Company, and I want to talk to you about it real fast because I don't know when the next time you're going to be able to be on the show is going to be. And when I gave you some of the HelloFriend beer, you were kind enough to give me some of this New World Kolsch, as you call it. So I'd love to talk to you about that real fast if you have a sec.
Yeah, at least I could do to share with a friend. Yeah, it might be a minute because I got a crazy schedule over the next 6 months that may prevent me from joining you and talking about fun beer stuff, which is way more fun than what I'm doing most of the time. But Roger Davis and I did this beer originally. This is the beer, Faction New World Kolsch. Nate's New World Kolsch. I had to take my name out. I just couldn't own it there for a second. my ego like just discarded that. Anyway, so this was a beer Roger and I originally did in 2015 for the GABF Pro-Am. And this was a beer that had done well for me in local homebrew competitions in the Bay Area. And it was a classic Kolsch in its recipe formulation. But I always thought that Kolsch is a nice platform to play around with because in the homebrew world, you have a little bit more wiggle room because it is a hybrid style, and you don't necessarily need to control temperature as well. And because at least in the 2008 BJCP guidelines, and this persists, I believe, to this day, you could, there's a little bit more hoppiness that you can play with. It's not quite as much as like a as the alt beer styles, but you have a little bit more than you can play with as opposed to something like a Helles or something like the classic German lagers. I mean, you know, German pills can get quite hoppy in terms of hop bitterness, but I felt like Kolsch is one that you could make a slight American interpretation of in terms of hop flavor and hop aroma, just a little bit, not too much. Those are the basic gist behind this beer of like what makes it different or unique. The beer was originally brewed homebrew level with Belma, and then sometimes Mosaic.
Okay.
In addition to either Hallertau on the bittering side or Simcoe on the bittering side, and then I would blend it with a hop like Saphir in the Whirlpool hop, or a hop like maybe even Hallertau, or maybe even hop like any of the other kind of new school Hallertau derivatives like Mandarina Bavaria, some of the ones like that.
Right.
One that I think we'd settled on well that would work well at Faction, I'd done a variation of this at Marin Brewing as well with Arnie and done Belma there, and that was a really good interpretation of it also. But idea that I think worked well at Faction, and now that we've done two iterations of this, so Roger and I originally brewed it at Faction in 2015 and brewed it again recently a couple months ago, was a little bit of Mosaic in the Whirlpool, a little bit of Saphir in the Whirlpool, and then bitter it with Simcoe. But the bitterness is fairly restrained, which you kind of expect for a Kolsch, like around 15 IBU in the bittering charge, a classic bittering charge added about 60 minutes in the boil. And then right when the Whirlpool hits, hit it with a nice charge of 5 to 7 pounds. And this is like 20 barrels. So not a huge charge, but enough to sort of notice it, of Saphir and Mosaic. And then you get a little bit of this, intangible connecting with the hybrid yeast and Kolsch yeast, obviously kind of a melon quality.
Oh, yeah.
Out of many Kolsch yeast, way the Kolsch yeast expresses itself, especially when you give it a little bit of temp, not too much, to ferment it around 60. Mm-hmm. Let a little bit of Mosaic and a little bit of, Saphir, like a newer school German or noble derivative hop, which is slightly fruity, kind of connect to the whole side of it. I think that was one of the things that works well in terms of new school hops, Kolsch yeast, meat in the middle, make something that is maybe more complex than the, original pieces. But otherwise, the base malt of the beer is just straight up pills with a little bit of Vienna. So really, really simple. And the one interesting challenge, and this is a total COVID era challenge to making this kind of a beer right now,
yeah.
Teresa would probably relate to this. If you're trying to bring environment, you're trying to bring in, great German malts, they're really hard to get right now, right?
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Normally I would want to brew
right now, but we had some challenges a few months back when we were trying to brew all these German lagers for like Oktoberfest.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. This is right. Thank you, Teresa. This is the same range in which we brewed this beer, which was about two months back. It was like, we kind of scratched and scrambled and didn't get any environment, which I normally wanted to do for this iteration of it. It's one of my favorite go-tos. Hard to go wrong. Environment always tastes good.
Yeah.
But we had best pills, and we had a Czech malt, which the exact maltster name escapes me right now. I'm sorry. But it was nice to kind of have this sort of slightly different malt twist. As they're tasting malts, it all tasted good. So you sort of adapt to what you can right now, especially during the limited ways in which the pandemic is not giving us what you would normally be the go-tos. But I think that actually made it kind of interesting and kind of cool, and gave it a different twist to it that we normally have. Very happy with it. Normally also I would do WLPO 29, the White Labs Kolsch yeast, which I like a lot. Mm-hmm. We did the Lallemand dry yeast, which I was really happy with on this one, which I'd never tried before.
Yeah, okay.
which was really cool. And I was stoked to try that on the commercial level. I was really happy with the results. If anything, it probably helped hit the, final gravity maybe slightly better, but
were you nervous is a stupid phrase, but were you concerned about
don't always think it's going to turn out perfect, especially when it's a one-off. Yeah.
Right. Well, and also because you're very methodical in how you present your beers and how you design your beers and how you go through it. Like you're a home brewer, obviously, but I think you think more like an engineer and a commercial brewer in that respect, where you really try to piece the flavors together and make sure the puzzles sort of match, right? But
I try to, and you learn as much as you can from the whatever the approaches of the commercial brewer that you're working with. And I think that one thing that you know has helped the collabs that I've always done is to hang out and have a few beers with the brewer. I mean, obviously they're not going to invite me in there otherwise, but like I say this because like you hang out again like near the time you're going to make the beer and like get to know again like what's different, what's new, what are you struggling with, what are you not struggling with. That really helps, and not fight things upstream. You know what I mean? Like not make a strange design choice about how you want to do something that isn't going to fit.
Don't put your.
I've obviously known Roger a long time, so I knew how Faction does brewing, and how you know how to not, you know, bring something in that was going to be odd. And this was pretty straightforward. I mean, a culture isn't that challenging and difficult in that sense. But one thing I did that was a little bit different that they don't do that often was just a little bit of calcium chloride. You know, I wanted to accentuate maltiness a little bit, not quite to the level that we were talking with Tommy and Stefan, where I was going super big on it, but it's not a hazy. So it wouldn't have made sense. So I did want to bump that up because I like what that can do for maltiness. And as we all know and understand, can potentially do that for the beer. But one thing I didn't do and I'd done there before was just, you know, kind of a simple what's my baseline for the water profile. I was kind of assuming things there. And if we were going to make this more often, or if I did this again, or if I did another beer there again anytime soon, I'd kind of want to compare that versus this. Not because I dislike this, think the chloride worked well, but I think I understand what it did and how I would necessarily like dial it in something else. Because we've talked about making a strong pale also, which would be really fun. But now I feel like I've done that with the water that Almia typically has, I would check again. You know, drought notwithstanding, and it was like all East Bay water tends to be way more in flux just in doing stuff on the homebrew level because our water supplies are way more constricted.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean,
as far as
pre-planning, you know, with the yeast goes, like you're using the white labs, but you're using dry yeast. Did you think like, oh, this is going to be totally different? Like all of my design choices are potentially thrown out the window because you did pick the yeast specifically for developing these melony characters that do blend well with the yeast.
Totally. Thank you. Really good point, Jason, because that WLPO 29, I know what it would do, fermented at 60, mash this beer in at 150, trying to get probably about 2 Play-Doh finishing gravity.
Okay.
Maybe 2 to 2.5 Play-Doh finishing gravity max. Going into dry yeast made me think this overgeneralization, but people who use like an 001 or Cali Ale dry yeast oftentimes get over attenuation because your pitch rate can sometimes be pretty high on the dry yeast side, and the quality there is better than people used to think. So
yes.
I was specific about the mash temp. I didn't want to underdo it. So I didn't want it to be too dry, knowing that we had a lot more, a little bit more hop bitterness, and a little bit more hop flavor going in this beer than you would have for a typical Kolsch. I didn't want it to be over attenuated and way bitter. Like that would be kind of a weird balance. Yeah. It isn't really what I wanted. I want to kind of push the boundaries in terms of hop aroma and flavor. Therefore, I didn't want the finishing to be way too low. So one way to control that, at least the temp to control that, was mash temp. And interesting though, because Santiago, who's one of the production brewers at Faction, awesome guy, did most of the brew with him in terms of that side of things in particular, and most of the first 3/4 of the brew day. Noticed that he'd actually just come back from vacation, and that was one of his first few brew days back, and like the flow meters weren't quite what he'd remembered from before, and the temps weren't quite what I remembered before, so we were both, I was learning along with him and sort of dialing it in, and we were noticing both together that like to hit a mash temp that was maybe slightly higher or different, at least different than the normal Faction mash temps, we had to pay extra attention. So that was the attempt to control that, and I think it worked out well. I think I would have overshot the finishing if we didn't pay attention to that. So I'm glad we did.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad we did. That was, you know, probably the most important aspect of that question. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, fun beer. I mean, I don't get a chance to do as many collab beers as I wanted to do when I was homebrewing as much, and still means a lot to me. And to have it, you know, when Roger was super stoked on it and he got the labels kind of slightly redone and reprinted from their original, the original label design in 2015 when it was just a, draft beer. The first time I've ever had a beer packaged.
Wow.
From a brewery, and to have like,
that's nice, man.
Yeah. It was just sort of like a sketchbook of a name at the time. It was one that kind of persisted, and I wouldn't put my own name and face on there, but they did, we did this like kind of fun cartoon way of doing it, which, was awesome. You know, was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's a great tasting beer, man. You know, that melon quality does come through, and it's more like on the honeydew than cantaloupe kind of thing. Where it is, it's, I would even say like, and I don't mean this that it's over, that it's under attenuated over, but I mean like a, almost like an over rich cantaloupe.
Yeah. That was sort of the, that was the kind of effect you're going for. I'm glad that came through.
Yeah, definitely.
That was the idea. That's the idea.
That's the new world part of it, is that,
yep.
That sort of almost like super sugary white grape cantaloupe.
I wanted just a little bit of that. And where this goes back to like my nerding out about what was happening with hops, like 2012, 13, 14, 15, like, and what is happening with IPA now, and what we talked about with the HelloFriend guys and everyone else is doing cool IPAs these days. Like, not all new hops and not all new American hops have to be completely in your face.
Right.
Like they can meld and blend with old world styles and the styles that we're familiar with, but dialed way back, because they're so assertive. You can use them in limited quantities and get kind of a weird, interesting effect, which doesn't necessarily have to be like, I think it's rad that the consumer knows what Mosaic means.
Yeah.
It's cool that the consumer knows that like what all these new hop varieties are, and that New Zealand hops are a thing and they're exciting and all that stuff. I think that's awesome. But at the same time, you can introduce these like new powerful ingredients, like dialed way down to like, you know, 2.5 on the dial, and it insert it kind of in this weird stealth way into styles that we all have known and loved, and let it sort of add a weird complexity that connects to something like the Kolsch strain.
Yeah. Well,
right. And try and find this, like, if I own a production brewery, like I'd be playing around with that on these kind of style of beers, because I'd be looking for like, what's that thing that I'm going to enjoy and that the other guy on the other side of the bar is going to enjoy that they're not necessarily, you know, she loves that, but she doesn't know what it is. He likes it too. He thinks it's something else. Now I know what it really is. And you can have fun with that. You know what I mean? Like that, that could be like a way in which, you know, these super powerful hop varieties that are meant to blow your head off in IPAs, like, could be used in different ways.
I agree. I think it is very interesting. Going back to what you said about the guys, you know, the beer drinkers knowing the hop names. I've talked to some breweries on the show that sort of were like, yeah, that's cool, but it, like, with knowledge, with any knowledge about any process in the brewing industry where you're on the other side of the counter, it can sort of have the opposite effect where they go like, oh, I don't like that hop, so I'm not going to like your beer.
That's true. Yeah, some people are, and like, you know, Simcoe's Caddy, I don't like that one, or Citra tastes like soap, I don't like that one.
And it's weird.
Mosaic is weird and fruity, I don't like that one. But I mean, the hop thing and the hop freshness and fresh beer in general for IPAs has been like a big education win.
Yes.
For like craft brewing or like small breweries in general. So,
but
I don't know, but I'm not in the consumer's face. I kind of want to hear what Teresa has to say about that.
Yeah, Teresa,
question.
What do you think?
Do you think that people will select or not select beers based on that kind of, like, I'm a Simcoe guy or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are some people that really want to know what hops are in a beer because they think they're allergic to a hop, and they very well could be, or they just really hate the flavor of that particular hop. And like, the most common one is Mosaic, like that they avoid Mosaic because they
allergic. Interesting.
They either think they're allergic to it, which I don't know, sure. But, or they just really think it tastes terrible. Like, it tastes like rotten fruit.
That's what I mean by the overripe fruit thing. Yeah, sometimes it's perceived.
And I think, you know, every hop kind of has its range of where its good, useful qualities come, and then some ways it can be used that it are less desirable. So I could totally see, you know, if you had like a single hop Mosaic beer and it was used in a way that kind of over-accentuated the rotten fruit qualities. You'd be like, right. Okay,
wrong yeast or whatever. Yeah. But and that's sort of what these other people have been getting at. And that's was the reason why I brought it up. Like, education is overwhelmingly good, but mm-hmm. it's that, like, sometimes consumers know just enough to be dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be misapplied or misunderstood.
Yeah. And right? it's very hard in the brewing industry, in the craft mm-hmm. beer industry in general, to apply enough information. Because as we all know, and people listen, you guys, most of your homebrewers or craft brewers or whatever, so you guys can attest to this, where you know a certain thing, but there's always layers in how it's applied and how you know fresh the hops are and how late into harvest they were harvested. So it's not just like, well, Mosaic tastes like this and I don't like this. It's never going to be that.
No, it's not.
That's sort of like when you go to a beer fest. That was just one little anecdote about, like, knowledge is great and we should definitely have more of it, but it's hop knowledge is overwhelmingly more complex than we really know.
It gets generalized.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, like, everything does.
If you give people a taste, I mean, sometimes that's the best thing is, like, if someone's interrogating you about what hops are in what, you might as well just start pouring them little tastes of things, because then they're just experiencing what that beer actually is, not overthinking what they think they know about it already.
Right. Well, yeah, that makes sense, especially when you're the brewer standing on the other side of the bar and able to interact with the customer like that. You can help correct perceptions, or at least give them, you decide.
Yeah.
You have a taste and check it out. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have done a number of dry hop kolsches, like either, you know, we had a kolsch that didn't attenuate quite as far as we thought it would, or, you know, we had just for whatever reason, we split a batch and we dry hop part of it. I love doing that little dry hop kolsch. Because, yeah, we'll just do like half pound per barrel,
mm-hmm. exactly,
or, Galaxy or whatever, and it just makes this, like, it's not like an IPA, it's not like a Kolsch really anymore, it's not really even a pale ale, it's just this other thing.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. I think that's super cool, and there's a lot of space American brewers can play. I mean, German brewers could too. I think I wouldn't necessarily do it, but way a lot of room you could play around with there, and make something that doesn't necessarily exist right now, but could, you know, could be a connecting piece between all these styles that isn't really well defined right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is more subtle, you know, like all that stuff I was talking about was mostly on the hot side. But I like this idea of doing a really small, like half pound per barrel on the cold side too, and then getting a different perception there.
Well, I got bad news for you, Nate. I'm on the Faction website. They do ship in California, just like Teresa at Crooked Lane. So you can get on Faction website and figure out how to get beer delivered for you. They don't have your beer as being an option for delivery in California.
It's out.
Oh, it ran out.
Yeah, it ran out.
That was my how to get this beer plan.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. They do have a German-style Helles with Strata. That sounds real good.
Which is really good. I highly recommend that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
A lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a rad experience, man. And the beer is great. It's definitely...
Thank you.
When you hand it to me, you're like, if there was ever such a thing as a New World Kolsch, I think this would be it. And I agree with you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it would be. Slight twist, American twist on a Kolsch. So.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff, man. Thanks for sharing. I really appreciate it. You mentioned the label, and it's like Roger, like, looking at you, eating your face, and you're like, your face, like, a 45-degree angle where you're, like, screaming.
It's a riff on an old picture that our friend John Weber took, and
it's good,
like,
and
high contrast digital editing on it. It's like us hanging out at Triple Rock a long time ago drinking IPAs or something, you know.
It's like, you know, a black background or whatever, so your hair is not visible, it's just your dumb face. And I gave some to my father-in-law, and I was like, here, you know, have this beer. And he's like, is that Nate? Did he cut his hair? And he was concerned about your hair. I'm That's like, really no, you funny. Just can't see it, bro. It's fine. Nate's okay.
No, it's good.
Nate is not going through anything weird. He has not cut his hair.
No, it's just us acting like fools or vampires or something. I don't even know.
Foolish
it's
vampires, wonderful. Man. Yeah. Well, thanks, Nate. I appreciate it. It was a good
thank
beer.
You guys. Great hanging out. We'll do this again soon.
Teresa, thank you as well for taking the time out of your evening to join us and talk beers. And Teresa, one day we're going to get you beers for the show. We're gonna work that out.
I have a plan.
You do?
I'm going to jump on the Athletic one, and I can order those myself. So.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to have Athletic Brewing Company on at some point, I think, later this month.
Later this month.
Yeah, the non-alcoholic brewery.
I know. I'm really curious about that. I'd like to learn more about that. So I'm going to grow.
Me too.
My questions.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested, you know, in all kinds of ways. But anyway, thanks a lot for tuning in, everybody. I really appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsor, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com and learn about everything. And I mean, absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home. They also do coffee roasting, wine making, mead making, all that kind of stuff. Everything you ever wanted in a homebrew shop and more. So check them out, morebeer.com. Until next time, everybody, we'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.